in their skin color, perhaps somebody who speaks Urdu, maybe somebody who's from India, Pakistan, maybe somebody who, you know, is male or female or muhajjaba or a Muslim or Shia, whatever the case may be. Those are all things that are what's called a fitri, innate, inside of us, given to us by Allah Himself. He said, I'm the one that made you into what? Shu'uban wa qaba'ila, nations and tribes. And by doing that, He makes us feel like it is innate for us to always feel like I belong to this tribe. The reason why we seek out those who are like-minded, it makes us feel like we are, number one, accepted by this tribe. Number two, we feel like we belong to this group. Okay, please follow me. If I also walk in and there's a group of people who, let's say, are, I don't know, people who are like me, who speak my language from my country, from my religion, from my community, then there are those who are none of those things. Non-Muslim, non-Desi, I don't know, not from Toronto. If I go and sit with them, I'll feel right away what? Strange, alienated, isolated. I'll be made to feel like you don't belong in this group. That's all what? That's all innate. Okay? Which means that our desire to seek out that group where we feel like we're accepted is again innate inside of us. The example I often give is that, you know, when I first arrived in Qom in 2004, a long, long time ago now, the first thing they do as non-Iranians is they teach you Farsi. Okay? For 7 months, they teach you how to read, how to write, how to speak, everything, from 0 all the way to 100. And because my school naturally was all non-Iranians, it was a school of about 50 to 60 different nations that are represented. Okay? They made it a point, the school did, that they would place you in a class where somebody from your country is not in that class. They do it on purpose. To force you to speak Farsi with the person beside you. So in my class, I remember very first class in the house of learning Farsi, there was 12 of us, and none of them knew English. So there was a Chinese guy, there was a Russian guy, there was a Lebanese guy, there was a Bengali guy, there was, who else? A guy from Brazil, a guy from Chile, different nations, okay? The classes were 50 minutes in length, 5-0. After that, you have a 10-minute break. And downstairs in the school is a little cafeteria store area. Little main hall, you go, you buy some chai, you buy some snacks, whatever, in that 10-minute break. It was amazing to watch them come down, everyone come down after class, and what, and look for?
The country.
Look for your circle. So anyone from America, Canada, London, I'm like, okay, I'm coming, right? Anyone from Karachi or even from Delhi or from Lahore or from Hyderabad even, haha, I don't know. Right? Anybody from Lebanon or Iraq, close, anyone who's even close to your own tribe, you gravitate towards that. To the point where people actually direct you. They're over there in that corner. Okay. Right? True? That's what? That's fitri. It's innate. Meaning what? That from this very beautiful surah, we get one very important message to start off our discussion about raising pious kids, is that it is innate inside of us, innate to feel like we belong to something. Okay? It's innate to feel like we belong to something. One of the most depressing and debilitating feelings we could ever have is to feel invisible. Because when I feel like I belong to something, I feel acknowledged. Please follow me very carefully. I feel acknowledged. If I walk into the Bengali group, they'll ignore me. A, I don't know the language. Number two, nothing in common. If I walk into, let's say, the Chinese guys, they'll ignore me. I won't feel acknowledged. They may look like, look, you're in the wrong group, you should be over there somewhere. You're not here. And this need for us to be acknowledged comes innately from this surah, where Allah says, I'm the one that put that inside of you. Okay? The process in raising proper children comes from the initial thing about this idea inside the home. So I want you to imagine now that, let's say, for example, after tonight's program, we're sitting around, let's say me and five of you, everyone else went home, we're having a tea, we're breaking some bread. Somebody walks into the hall, they say salam, and they shake all of your hands, and they walk past me. The second guy comes in, shakes everyone's hand, walks past me. The third guy, the fourth guy, the five guys walk into the hall, approach the circle of five of us, salam, 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 and walk by me. After the sixth guy, I'm like, wait. Do you not see me right now? Am I visible to you? How are you missing all of this? I don't understand. No, why? You didn't even say salam to me. You didn't even acknowledge my presence. So it's not just kids. We always feel the need to be acknowledged. Always feel the need to be acknowledged. The moment that we feel like we are invisible or unheard, then it is a detrimental feeling that later on rears its ugly head in depression, anxiety, stress, self-worth issues, addiction sometimes. I deal a lot in the East with drug addiction cases. You'd be surprised how many of our kids are completely addicted to drugs nowadays. It may not surprise you, I don't know. And when I'm able to penetrate their little inner world, it's very hard to do that, break down the walls, you know, they allow me into their world. When I really truly find out why do you need to go to drugs to numb you, it always goes back, not always, sometimes goes back to them growing up in a home where they weren't acknowledged. They were never acknowledged. They never felt like they belonged to the family. The moment they would open their mouth, they'd be shushed. Just be quiet. No one's asking you anything. Having a family discussion, a debate, let's say, for example, you're saying your piece, your sister's saying your piece, and the substitute judge over here, he wants to say a few words. Just shh, please. At 10, at 15, at 18, at 21, after all, it plays with your self-value. You start to feel like I'm invisible inside the family. And the moment that the child does not feel this from inside the home, they search for it outside the home. Because it's innate. Innate. Innate means that you can't deny it. You cannot be comfortable with being not acknowledged. Nobody is. The moment that you don't listen to your wife when she wants to get her baras out and get her shagai out and her gila out and her pain out, if you're not that sounding board, somebody else will be. I'm sorry, one of the biggest problems we have inside of our communities is that everybody knows about everyone else's business. Behind closed doors, there should only be a husband and wife. I know exactly what's happening between you and your sauce, between you and your susur, between you and your saleh, between you and your nun, everything. Why? Because we talk to others because we don't talk to each other. Khair. This need to feel acknowledged. The very first step in raising proper children is to make them feel like they have a voice inside your home. Now, how do I do that? You'd be surprised how you do that. It's not brain science. It's not rocket science. Not some big Irfani falsafa. It's not. When they're speaking, listen to them. I have three kids. 11, 6, 4. They're all in school. Grade 6, grade 1, junior kindergarten. And every day when I ask them on the way home from school, how was your work? How was school? They have, mashallah, these amazing stories. And my middle one, she starts from Adam. She goes through Nuh, makes a left at Ibrahim, ends up at the Holy Prophet. And the more I listen to her, the more she embellishes her story. Why? Because Baba's right now listening to me. The moment that she begins to talk and everyone else talks over her, that happens enough times, you feel invisible. When you start to feel invisible inside your home, there's not a worse feeling in the world, because these young kids, the very first place they search for acknowledgement is inside the home. The family unit is everything to them. When mama and baba and baji and bhaiya and me play a board game together or color together or have a meal together or go to the park together or go to Niagara Falls together, that's the best moment of their life. Because everyone is there, and I feel like I'm also part of the entire system as well. Because there comes a time where these children look to you as the mother and the father as everything. Okay? And if you have young kids in the audience, then you have, you know, you're ahead of the game. If you have a teenager at home and you haven't done all this, there's still hope. But you can start now right away. These small kids look to their father and their mother, and they are everything to them. When Ummi walks into the center and she has an abaya on, the little daughter also wants to wear abaya. When she has a hijab on, a certain tied a certain way, with all those folds and 40 pins, she also wants 40 pins. She's 6 years old. If mama has a purse with dad's money in it, she also wants a purse with nothing but Shopkins or crayons in it. Everything that she does as well. If she cries in Masaib, her head's down and she also shakes her shoulders. Same idea. Baba walks in and a little mini-me walks in behind him. Same kurta, same hairstyle, same salam, same kya hale, same style of matam. If he's reciting up here, he's right beside his father. Because for him, Baba is what? Is a superhero. Baba is Spider-Man, Baba is the Dark Knight, Baba is X-Men, Baba is Iron Man, everything. He talks about you in the playground. That my father is this tall, my father has this many big muscles. Right? My father can beat up your father easily. True? Yeah, so I saw my dad once lift the table with one finger. One finger, mashallah. A whole table with one finger, yeah. There comes a moment where everything is you. And if you give them that acknowledgement at that moment, they don't need it anywhere else. The problem with our kids today as they get older is that they're being acknowledged, but by the wrong people. And because it's such a strong innate feeling, they'll look past the idea. They actually tell me, Mana, I know these guys are toxic. They commit sins, they commit crimes. I know they do, but they make me feel like I'm their brother. I belong to their gang. It's a whole tribal gang mentality research. There's a whole documentary out there on this. That sometimes we will turn a blind eye to the faults of our brotherhood, but because they're our brotherhood, it doesn't matter. Because I don't want to become invisible if I leave that brotherhood. If that begins at home, there's no need for anyone to come in and start to hijack that feeling inside of your child. Okay? And Islam very beautifully says, the way that you acknowledge somebody is how? Is you greet them first. First thing is you greet them. Small things. The Prophet was obsessed. The Prophet of Allah, before you could even utter one word, he already acknowledged your existence. By how? Salaamu alaykum. That's the part that drives our adults crazy about our youth today. They walk in, salam bhi nahi karte hai bachche aajkal. Don't say a single salam to us. Fine, you don't know me, but at least I'm a human being, right? Come and say salam to me. But we live in an era, why do we sometimes wait for the child to say salam? Why can't we come out and say salam to them? Acknowledge them. And then Islam says, because they acknowledge you, it's wajib that you in turn acknowledge them. Wa alaykum salam wa rahmatullah. The salam is nothing but what? Acknowledgement. I see you, I hear you, you are somebody to me. I'm stopping, how are you? Things are well, yes? Move on. Remember the circle idea, 4 or 5 times not saying salam to me at all. After a while, am I invisible to you? Is there a problem? Are you upset at me? No, how could I be upset at you? Why aren't you acknowledging me? Right? I can tell you how many youth today tell me, that Milana, if I was to walk into my house tomorrow and I had a missing tooth and a black eye and I was limping, my parents wouldn't even notice. How many times I've walked in from school, I put my bag down, I put my shoes off, I enter the house, I go upstairs, I sit in my room for 2 hours. 2 hours until someone says, wait a second, where is Asad? Where is Ali? Where is Hassan? They should be home by now. For 2 hours. Do ghante ke baad main jaldi aa jaa yaar. Do ghante ke baad. Invisible. I'm invisible. Nobody cares. Ask me how I am. Ask me how is it going. Nothing. Because the child's worth and self-worth happens through you, the parents. I've given an example many times, right? My middle one, you know, she's a personality. She likes to tell jokes. And she tells jokes. Sometimes they're funny, sometimes not so much. When they're funny, I laugh. When she sees that my joke got Baba's laughter, she'll tell the exact same joke over and over and over again. So long as you laugh, Baba, I'm gonna tell that joke. And the more I laugh, the harder she laughs. Baba, you know the joke already. How can it still be funny for you? But it's not. She finds her laughter in Baba's laughter. Right? She finds her smile in Baba's smile. You ever sit there and color with your child? The Prophet says what? The Prophet says to, when you are with your child, become a child. Hadith says. When you are with your child, become a child. So sometimes all she wants is for me to color with her. So she has her coloring book. She tells me, this is your page, Baba. This is my page. I won't color on your page. You don't touch my page. Fine, no problem. She'll tell me this is blue, green, black. These are your colors. And as I'm coloring, she doesn't care about her page. She's just staring at me coloring. She'll pat me. I said, gee, she'll smile at me. For half an hour, 45 minutes, I'm on the ground now. You can imagine now, me, this big hopper now, on the ground now, sitting there coloring for 45 minutes. But the 45 minutes is her world. That's her dunya. That's all that she cares about. Can you tuck me in? Can you read? These are small things, right? These are things that are what? Acknowledgement. That are innate. Don't tell me it's a Western kid thing. No. You also had that. But you stopped expecting it from your father. Right? My father will tell me about stories of his father. My dada. He said, you think that he ever spoke to me? He didn't. We were scared of our father. That's one extreme, right? That whenever Papa came home, he would sit up straight, make sure that, you know, don't say a word, don't bother your dad, he's tired from work, right, this and that. He would never sit there and tell me, ha, beta, kya, ha, no, never. That's one extreme. The other extreme now today is the fact that the father comes home from work and the kids are lying down, ha, ha, hi, dad. That's also one extreme. It has to be a middle ground. But I'm talking today about parent to child, not child to parent. Inshallah, next time we'll talk about kids and the parents. But right now, parent to child. So if you had that growing up in your respective country, please unlearn that. We live in a different era today. Because it's a different era, our parenting style has to be different. This is the era of involved parenting. Both parents, if you are blessed to have both parents and you and your spouse beside you, then it's equally important that both of you are on the exact same page. I remember my mom sometimes comes and spends the weekend with us. And she's watching my wife and I do my oldest daughter's homework. Grade 6. For 2 hours, my wife and I are sitting there doing math with her, science with her, English with her. Grade 6. And my mom is amazed. I don't remember you guys ever having a homework to begin with. Forget that me and your father sit there and do it with you. But this is a different era. The first thing these kids want is to be acknowledged. The Prophet, when somebody would speak to them, he would physically turn his body to be right across from the person talking. Yanika, he's looking this way and the person's talking in the peripheral. And he is, you know, answering him as he's walking away from him. No. If someone's talking like this, he would stop and face them. Meaning what? Telling them. Doesn't matter what you're saying to me, but whatever it is, it's the most important thing at this moment for me. Nothing else matters. There's nothing worse. Someone's pouring your heart out and you're doing this. Bolo? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know. I know. That's not being there in the moment. Sometimes when my kid wants to tell me a story, she grabs the phone first, puts it on the corner, says, "Now, Baba, let me tell you a story." I said, "Okay." Acknowledgement. It's so important. I cannot tell you. I counsel these kids in their 30s. Not kids anymore. In their 30s. They can't hold a job. Right? They have so much issues with their self-worth. They themselves are parents now. Right? They doubt everything. They doubt the ability. And when you sit there and you try to get to the nitty-gritty details, they were always quiet inside of their home. There were always, the moment I would open my mouth, Malana, that's it. Who's talking to you right now? You do that enough times, they're invisible. You think, oh, they know that I love them, you'd be surprised. That resonates for generations afterwards. So please, I implore myself and all of you, if God gave you children in this room, doesn't matter what age they are, if they're younger than you have, you're ahead of the game. Please acknowledge their presence at home. Wake up in the morning and say your salams to them. Give them a nice hug on the way out the door. Kiss them. Tell them that, you know what, I hope you have a great day. A man would approach the Holy Prophet and say, "Ya Rasulullah, I've never kissed my child before in my life." Hadith, straight hadith. He says, if you continue this way, then someone like you will never taste the bounties of heaven. Why? Because it takes a hard heart for you not to embrace your child. And, you know, my typical immigrant fathers, they're not used to this embracing of the child. My father would hug me on Eid. He would hug everybody else on Eid as well. I couldn't count on my hand how many times he would embrace me. This wasn't his style. Because real men don't embrace their kids. No, it's important that you give them a random hug here and there. And these are small things. You think, yeah, that's exactly what I want. That is the biggest acknowledgement. Questions so far? The first is yes. Go ahead. Sorry?
How about Eid Mubarak?
Mm-hmm. How about taking your child on Eid and saying, look, let's go to a store and pick whatever you want. Today is Eid, right? And today is after 2 months and 8 days of suffering and crying and grieving, let's go. Today is a happy day for the Ahlul Bayt, and we share in their happiness and we share in their grief. Right? Out of the blue, without him asking for it or begging for it, you guys say, look, oh, by the way, guys, we're here at this store. Let's go inside, pick one toy, and that's it. Today's Eid, it's on me, don't worry. Sends a huge message. Huge message. The biggest thing is we want them to be acknowledged inside the home. This is such an important and powerful feeling. They will actually attach themselves to the wrong people. The moment that tribe or that gang or that brotherhood, that circle makes them feel accepted, that's all that matters. Doesn't matter what they do outside of the house. Yes? Inshallah? Okay, great. That's point number one. Point number two. Yes, please. Great question. Why did the verse not say Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu? Why was it about everybody? Because anybody know? Bobby?
Because it's not just the Mu'mineen who are divided in tribes and nations. It's the whole humanity.
Okay.
So maybe that's one of the reasons.
Okay. So number one is that the content of the verse point to a general overall discussion. Number two, this is very much about the fitrah of the insan, this verse. It affects everybody. This is not to do with Shia, Sunni, or Jew or Christian. If you are an inhaling, exhaling human being, this affects everybody. Good question. Number two. Communication. So key. So cute. A parent has to accept the fact that today's child communicates different, and the child has to sometimes train themselves to accept the communication of the parents. We live in an era of very, very sensitive children. Okay? Very sensitive children. They're very hassas. I don't know how many of you are fully aware of the mental health epidemic we have in our communities. We have 15-year-olds taking antidepressant pills every day. We have 16-year-olds suffering from insomnia. 17-year-olds having eating disorders. 18-year-olds seeing a counselor once a week. And the first immediate reaction from a lot of us elders is the fact that, you know, over dramatic generation. Some drama, sorry. What could he possibly be anxious about? What's your stress? You're 15 years old. And imagine you guys coming home one day in Karachi, India, wherever you're from, and telling your dad that when you're 15, Baba Mujibu, stress for that. Acha, stress for that. Is it all stress? I'll show you stress. So it was never acknowledged. Not my topic. But a lot of it is this idea that, you know, they are a generation that is consumed with tone. Not what's being said, how it's being said. Right or wrong is not my debate. They have to understand sometimes to not be stuck on tone. Be stuck on what the parent is saying, not how they're saying it. On the other side, you can do a lot of good if you just change the tone a little bit. Okay? So, three messages. No smoking. Don't you dare smoke. Thank you for not smoking. Same message? Same message. Three completely different ways of saying it. In our discussion today, from the parent to the child, I want all of you, all of me as well, to work on our tone. Okay, we have a lot of good things to say to our kids, a lot of wisdom, a lot of experience, a lot of wealth to share with our children. But if it's wrapped in a tone that they don't like, then all they hear is tone. They don't hear anything else. And it's frustrating us, and it's frustrating them. All he ever does is yell at me. I never get anything right. There's never a moment where he pats me on the back. Oh, such a beautiful example. Allah is asking Nabi Musa. Okay? Nabi Musa now is at this point in his life where he's asked to go back to Fir'aun. And now you tell Fir'aun about me, meaning one Lord. And when you speak to him, قُولُوا لَهُ قَوْلًا لَيِّنًا. Oh, such a beautiful message by Allah to all of us. Layyina. The whole discussion one day, inshallah, someday I'll have with all of you on the different communication models in the Quran. Qawlan sadida, qawlan layyina, qawli baligha, qawlan sadida. All these qawls Allah has taught us how to communicate and with who. One of them is qawlan layyina. Layyina, for the sake of the Urdu Zaban log, is naram lahja. Soft tone. What's happening here? Please think about for a moment. Allah is asking Nabi Musa to go to Fir'aun. Fir'aun is the open enemy of God. Flat out has told his people that if you ever even consider worshipping Musa's Lord, I'll make your life miserable. If you want to worship anybody, worship me. It's one thing where he controls their finances, he controls where they live, he controls their mindset, but what he also controls, something very, very personal, is their worship. So not only am I going to not ask you to worship or worship God, the God of Musa, but make sure you worship me. That much of enmity towards Allah. And still, that same Allah is telling one of his Azim prophets, go and tell Fir'aun, but tell him, قَوْلًا لَيِّنًا, very softly tell him. Now, two reasons Mufassirin have said. Why? A soft tone. Number one, this is a prophet of God. Okay? Inappropriate to use any other tone. Any other tone. Tafsir says, and Tafsir al-Mizan, I believe, Allama Tabatabai says, that Allah is trying to tell Nabi Musa, Musa, you are my ulul azm prophet. It's not munasib for you, appropriate for you, to lower your tone to match anyone else's. You're always to maintain a qawlan layyina. That's why you are so great. And the kamal of the insan is that if you have achieved a great status, you don't sacrifice that status, especially for someone who is a jahil in front of you. I mentioned this, I think, a few nights ago, that the beauty of the akhlaq of the Ahl al-Bayt was that they had their own principles, right? I mentioned that. And they were, those principles would not be sacrificed by the person in front of them. So whether it's a man coming from Kufa towards our second imam and, you know, foolish and disgusting language, and the imam would respond in a qawlan layyina, or whether it's the qatil al-min al-mu'mineen who's shivering in front of him, and he would turn to his son and give him a glass of milk, or it's Imam Hussein, a few moments before he was to be killed, would ask Shimmer, was I a bad mawla to you? You maintain your level as a prophet of God. It should never be the case where you feel the need to what? To lower your azim level, or lower your qawl, or your tone for anyone else in front of you. You have some respect for yourself. People like me, for example, if someone's jahil, oh, I match that jahalat in 1 second. If someone's spewing fire at me, I'll spew, you know, 1,000 years of fire at them. If someone, for example, disrespects my family, oh, their whole khandan is, mashallah, will be disrespected. No problem. But that's not what qawlan layyana is. Number one. Number two, even more beautiful than that. That maybe with your soft tone, that might soften Fir'aun's heart. The ayah goes on to say, when you speak to him, لَعَلَّهُمْ يَتَذَكَّرَ أَوْ يَخْشَى, that maybe, just maybe, please hear me out, a beautiful verse. Maybe God says, with your قَوْلًا لَيَّنَا, he might have khushu in his heart for me. He might have softness. Who? Fir'aun. Fir'aun might have softness inside of his heart for God. Meaning what? For Allah, there's never a point of no return. Even he is telling Nabi Musa, telling us indirectly, that even Fir'aun might have a chance to come back to me. And if that trigger is your tone and your qawl, then choose qawlan layyina. You never know. We say the same thing inside of our home to our daughter and our son. The same thing. They don't listen. Right? And the onus is always on them, and it should be, I get it. I'm not talking about the kids today. The onus should be that no matter what I say, I'm their father, I'm their mother, they should blindly follow whatever I say. Doesn't matter what tone they use. But if you're not getting what you want by using that tone, use a different tone. If Allah is saying with your tone that might trigger his heart, Maybe through our tone, it might trigger our kid's heart to come towards us. And we have to be accepting of the fact that we live in a different era. It's funny, my wife and I talk about this all the time. There are things that my eldest does. She's 11 years old, right? And she's masum. I mean, she doesn't, it's not out of enmity, right? For example, if I call her from the kitchen and she's upstairs in her room, and from her room she says, "Yes, Baba," I cringe inside. Because I was always raised that if Baba or Mama call you, whatever floor they're on, get yourself to that floor. And stand in front of them and say, "Ji Baba, Ji Mama." Don't scream from the kitchen or from the bathroom. "What do you want, Dad?" Oh, that's when that chuckle comes up. Yeah. Not before. And I would look at my wife and she's like, she doesn't know any better. "Okay. Mr. Calm down, please, for a second. Coming, Baba." Small things. Right? Small things. Okay? So we have to be able now to understand that our tone is everything, especially in this generation. Accept it or not accept it, that's not relevant. It is a reality. We live in a very sensitive era. We have to change the way that we parent our kids. Okay? And it's very, very hard because you will parent the way you were parented. That's all you saw growing up. That's all you know. Even now, me talking, a lot of my elders think, "Oh, this guy is ruining us." The best way to parent the kids is tough love. A tough heart. It's not, I'm sorry. We're losing our kids. We're losing our kids. Question?
No.
No? Okay. Any questions so far? Awfully quiet today. You're tired of me after 5 days. I knew 5 days would be too much. 3 days is good, that's enough. Okay? So please, if you are somebody who your wife has told you or your husband has told you to, you know, just don't always be screaming and yelling. Take that to understand, it's a Quranic approach. Allah is instructing Nabi Musa with Fir'aun of all people to please be very soft. As tough as your kid is, he or she is not Fir'aun, I hope. You haven't met my kid one. Okay? Excellent. Those are two very important points I wanted to make. Acknowledgement and tone. What does that say now? You changed the clock? I have no idea. 45. I was telling him we went from no clock to a different clock every single day now. Yeah. It's flat and tafrit, I tell you. Piety inside the home. Piety inside the home. Please. These are things all of you know and understand. It's a matter of now, processing it and executing it. Okay, executing it. We don't live in an Islamic environment, number one. We live in an era now where day by day we are becoming more and more morally bankrupt. We live in an era right now where things that were abnorm back then are now norm today. Things that are norm today are abnorm in the deen. Right? It reminds me of the prophecy of the Holy Prophet, where he would say to his companions, "There'll come a time where what is munkar is what will become ma'aruf, and ma'aruf become munkar," meaning what? What was once vicious is now virtuous. Virtuous has become vicious. Okay? And they were shocked back then. How could this be, Ya Rasulullah? We live in an era today. If you want to cover yourself as a sister, you're looked at somebody who is imprisoned. Okay? If you don't want to go to a club, or you don't want to be with this person or that person, or try this, or drink this, or eat this, or smoke this, then you are weird. Something wrong with you? Things that, you know, were not accessible when I was growing up, or you need a credit card to access it, now it's free, anywhere you want to go. Right? So it is a very difficult era that we live in. In that era, you're raising kids in the West. So am I, three of them. I don't know about all of you, but I'm scared out of my mind. And part of it is the fact that we have to know what's in our control and what's not in our control. What's not in our control is the moment that that child leaves our home. Correct? The environment outside the home is not in our control. We can send them to an Islamic school if we want to, or to home care, daycare, homeschooling. That's fine. But ultimately, the strongest amount of control you have is inside your four walls. And there has to be enough piety inside those four walls for it to carry them outside the four walls. Okay? The problem is that these kids are not getting piety inside the home. Of course not outside the home. And we're expecting some miracle, some mojizat for my kid to come out as a pious kid. Tell me. From where? Not inside the home for sure. There, of course, there's music. There, of course, there's fighting and yelling. There, of course, it's haram food. Can you imagine how many Shia families bring home KFC Aramsi in this day and age? You'd be shocked. It's okay, it's chicken, it's not pork, man. Really? In this city, where mashallah, you have so many options for halal food. Now, living in Mobile, Alabama, right, where halal food is, you know, 80 miles away. Even then, you don't have that ijazah. You'd be surprised. You'd be surprised how many kids come and tell me that, can you please ask my father to not bring whiskey home? Shocked. I know where he keeps it. It's in the basement. He has an entire cellar of alcohol. And when he comes home drunk, we hide in our rooms. Shia ethnicity in this very city. Huh. And then they complain that my kid's off the track at 15, 16 years old. And they'll blame the alim, they'll blame the community, they'll blame the maraji, they'll blame everybody, but they never look themselves in the mirror. Kahan se leke aayenge bachche tak ko? Tell me where? From where? From where? From the WhatsApp groups? From those 2-minute videos that go spreading around? No, from all of you. From your four walls inside your home. How many times have I asked a child to come in during Salat, as outside in the parking lot, they say, Mulana, if you can go ask my father, he's there smoking. Tell him to come inside for namaz, I'll be right behind him. What do I say at that moment? I'm embarrassed for the father. When you approach the father, he actually starts to complain about his kid. He's right. Forget about his tongue. Look at what he's saying to you. He's begging you to lead me to Allah. He's begging you, I want to pray, but I want to pray beside my dad. I don't want to pray inside the hall and my dad's outside smoking. I want to wear hijab. But my mom says no. Abhi jaldi hai. Shaadi kaise hogi? Doesn't happen all the time. The phones don't ring, there's no rishtas. Her first cousin is married, her younger sister is married, all her friends are married, and she's not married. 25, 27, 20, 31 years old. The last hope is, take off the hijab. Blow dry your hair, take a selfie, post it on Facebook, and watch that phone ring. And it does. I'm sorry. In 6 months, they call me, it worked. And then I'll put it back on after marriage. Oh. Right? It's not piety. And I hammered all of you guys enough yesterday, the men, I'm sorry. I hope the ride home was okay last night. But I just want to say this piety is in our hands. We have to lead it. So if that means, you know, small things, this may sound odd to you, but small things like your own Quran circle at home. Besides the month of Ramadan. I'm not saying a juz a day. If you can, as a family, sit around and read one verse per person. One verse. If there's four of you, only four verses. With English translation, then move on. Go to the mosque together. Because the programs that, you know, LFO has here in Milton, or wherever has everywhere else, these things are not meant to replace things at home. They're meant to reinforce things at home. They're meant to say, look, you started that process in your home, and here we're supporting that process. Right? Bringing a child once a week on Thursday, or a few hours on a Sunday madrasa, is not going to cut it. Not this. They're being bombarded by shayateen. Not one shayateen. From all sources. Even in our Islamic schools, I'm sorry. If it goes to Wali or a Sadiq or a Hadi, it doesn't matter. All three of my kids go to Islamic school, and I'm still worried out of my mind. We have to now build piety inside the home. Okay? We have to start doing that. And that starts with our akhlaq, it starts with our ibadat. As I mentioned, at least on the weekend, there should be one jamaat prayer inside your home. If not every day, if possible. But this idea that we have that the child will somehow find piety inside the home is not going to cut it. If that means that you yourself need to reinforce your deen, then so be it. Then so be it. I know ulama who go to families and as a class, the family sits there and he teaches the family. It's such a beautiful concept. It's so beautiful. The father is there, the mother is there, the kids are there. They're all taking notes. They're learning as a family. Yeah. Questions so far? I have 10 minutes left. One more point I want to make, and then the masjid. These hours go by too fast. What kind of a child do you want to raise? How many of you have asked that question, you and your spouse? Or if you're a single parent, you and yourself. Where do I want my child to be in 10 years? You can't have it both ways, right? There can't be assimilation in the West and still holding on to some Islamic values. Something has to give. I'm not asking anyone to be isolated or to be on top of a mountain, in a cave, in a basement. No. No. The kamal, the perfection, the ultimate level of faith is to be, you know, integrated in this society and still hold on to your Islamic values. Right? Assimilation means no to Islam and yes to the West. Right? Isolation means yes to Islam and no to the West. Either one is wrong. What is right is integration. A little bit of your values, a little bit of our values. Right? Not everything is evil in the West. There's lots of goodness here. Lots of khair here. That you won't find in those Islamic countries in the East. I'm sorry. You'll find humanity here. You'll find respect and tolerance here. Right? You'll find at least a level of azadi and freedom here to have these programs here to a certain degree. But at the same time, the society preaches individualism. The society is the idea that everyone is right. So a very pluralistic society where you cannot sit there and bash this lifestyle or that lifestyle. Everyone has their own respective paths and every path is right for them. That we don't accept. But you have to ask you, what kind of child do I want to raise? Right? I have 15-year-old girls inside the home. The mother says, put the hijab on. The father says, behind the mom's back, make sure that when you get to school, take your hijab off. Here's some money for some makeup. Here's a brush. Make sure you go to the washroom, take off your hijab, do your hair up, make yourself look good. No, we're in Canada. Get that? It's not Pakistan, right? And then when it comes time for you to board the bus, go back to your bathroom, wash your face, put your hijab on. Just meaning it, don't worry. Don't tell mama. Does it happen? All the time. All the time. It's time for salat, it's wajib on her. And the mother or the father saying, go pray namaz, pray namaz, pray namaz. From upstairs, usko chhod do, it's okay, abhi chhodti hai. Leave her alone, don't pressure her for salat. She's only 11 years old. What type of child do you want to raise? What type? What type? Because something has to give. You have to be able to tell your child, it's okay if you guys are a little bit different from everybody else. Because you are. It's okay sometimes. The example I have to give is that everyone here is wearing a white t-shirt and one guy walks in with a bright yellow t-shirt on. And walks through the crowd and sits right to the front. Everyone's wearing whites. Bright whites. He walks in with his yellow shirt. Right away, all eyes will go on the yellow shirt. Let's go, Deko. You can't see that again. Right? And he has to be okay with the fact that I refuse to wear that white shirt. It's not my values. Or you can wear a white shirt, slip in, no idea where you start and where the society ends. No idea. You've now blended in. A little bit of a trickle of Islam here and there, but, you know, under the radar. At this stage, in this stage right now, that will not cut it. I'm sorry. You cannot accept a few and ignore a few, the Quran says. يَكْفُرُ بِبَعَذْ Right? وَيُؤْمِنُونَ بِبَعَذْ You cannot do that. You can't say, okay, I'll say yes to this in Islam and no to this. Yes to this and no to this. No. You have to ask yourself as a family, as a couple, what kind of child do I want to raise? Is it okay if she has a little bit of a distinction in her? I don't mean to say someone who's lonely or who's isolated or who is completely, like, you know, off to the side. No, the very first thing Imam Ali says in Khutbah Hammam 193, the famous khutbah of the Muttaqin, to Hammam, the people who are pious, hum ahlul fada'il. There are people of distinction. If the entire world is going this way, they're okay with going this way. They're okay with going this way. You have to be okay with that. If you want a proper, pious child. Doesn't mean that you're going to be isolated. Doesn't mean that you're going to live a horrible life. No. You're just telling the child, look, beta, we're not this. That's okay. That's their path. It's not your path. You belong to this family, you belong to that family, you belong to this family. You know, my daughter right now is facing in grade 6 now. She said, Baba, I tried to become friends with people, and the girls that are trying to that she's trying to be friends with, they turn around and say, look, you know, Miss Law, we can't be friends with you because you might go home and tell your dad what we do. So she'll say things sometimes. But I wish we were a normal family, Baba. Right? 11 years old? It's tough. And that's when I have to grab her and sit her down and talk to her and say, look, Beta, this is what we are. Right? Yeah, it's a little bit different. We're this way, but this itself also is a huge blessing for us. To avoid yourself from going down this stream sometimes and down this way is a huge blessing. You just don't see it right now. It's tough on her. It's tough on kids. I get it. You want to give them everything that everyone else is getting, but something has to give, guys. And you have to make that decision the hard way between you and your spouse. At least on the same page. At least behind closed doors. Not one kid said, Jaka namaz pardo, beta namaz mat pardo, it's okay. Or that, you know, it's time for Fajr and, you know, we let her sleep all the way through sunrise. Because she's tired, she has school, it's okay. She's 11, don't worry about Qaza, she can read it in the daytime or at night, for example. Right? So these things are a little bit difficult. So please, I want to leave this question with all of you. Sit down with your spouse and find out, where do we want to go with our kids? If we want to make sure that she doesn't go everywhere, then so be it. We have to make that clear to them. Because they're very confused right now, their kids. One message from one parent, another from another parent. Okay? Be okay as a family to be a little bit of the Ahlul Fada'il. People who are distinct from everybody else. It's okay if you walk in wearing the bright yellow shirt sometimes. It just means you have values that no one else does. It just means that I won't surrender my values, no matter how many white shirts there are. And later on, as she's getting older, he's getting older, they'll understand, you know what, I'm happy that Baba and Mama gave me that confidence. It's tough. I have a huge family. My father has 5 siblings here in Toronto. Many of you know that. They have their kids, they have their grandkids. Not all of them are quote-unquote on the path. So sometimes in a massive first cousins gathering, we have a lot of my first cousins' kids that don't wear hijab, for example. And my daughter does. Why can't, you know, sometimes she'll say she's so lucky she can just leave without worrying about sleeves and t-shirt and, you know, and this and that. I have to worry about socks and sleeves and making sure my hijab is not this, and a long sweater. But it's tough for 11-year-olds. I mean, the point I'm trying to make is that I know some exact same boat all of you are in. Don't think that it's easy on us. It's not, right? Everyone is in that struggle, but the struggle has to be accepted. Please, it can't just be a fairy, oh, okay, you know, they'll understand. No, it has to be a conscious decision to be made. Any questions? That's our class today. Yes.
I have a question about yesterday's topic of the Waliyah of the house.
Yes.
This is the question about if there's like a grandfather in the house, would he like have authority?
Good question. Great question. If there's a grandfather in the house, ultimately your Wali is your father. If your father has his father, then his Wali is his father. Okay. Right? If there is a father, if there is a family, let's say the 4 of you, and then your dada's there, or your nana's there, whatever, or your grandfather's there, then ultimately, you know, in charge of that 4 family structure is your father. But hopefully everyone under one roof is moving towards the same goals. Yeah. Good question. I like the way you think. It's good. Yes, Imam.
Regarding communication, Allah, sometimes I notice that it's because of the structure of the language itself.
Yes,
and
yes.
The culture. Kids may be saying it the right way.
Yes.
But we interpret it as
yes,
if it's something offensive.
Yes.
Or
yeah, great case. Point.
So how do we deal with that, even
great
though
point.
They are...
Yeah. So, sorry, for the sake of my sisters, the first question was about the idea that about yesterday's lecture was about Wilayat, and he was asking a very nice question, that if there is a grandfather in the house, at that moment, is he also the Wali? And I answered that. Iqbal's question about the idea that sometimes in communication, it's just the actual makeup of the English language sometimes. They don't mean to be disrespectful, but that's how the tone of that language is, right? English does not have the etiquette, adab, respect that Arabic, Farsi, and Urdu do. They don't. It doesn't. We don't differentiate between you and you, for example. Right? Whereas in Arabic, in Urdu, and Farsi, you know exactly if someone is older, your tone is a certain way. If someone's younger, it's a certain way. Right? They're very rich languages. English is a very weak language. Okay? So, it's important that, it's a great point that I wanted to make that I forgot, so thank you, Wale, that it doesn't come from a place of enmity. Sometimes, you know, my wife has to remind me, she doesn't wish to be disrespectful to you. That's just how English is spoken sometimes. Right? That's just how the language is. So, you know, ask yourself, you know your child. Soft-hearted, loving child does not wish to be disrespectful towards you, but you don't like the tone. Maybe you can tell her, but also keep in the back of your mind, it's not her fault or his fault. It's the language that they have learned. It's their fault. Right? So we have to kind of give that. That idea. Thank you. Yes.
How do parents can control the angerness when the child don't listen? Because we are from the East, and we are.
You come from the top of the generation. You come from the top of the generation.
So, what is the better way?
Great question. So, how can we control our anger towards our kids, or discipline? Discipline is very important. Discipline is key. I'm not asking you to not discipline your child. I don't think we live in an era now where physical abuse is going to cut it. I don't think there should ever be a moment where you should physically abuse your child or strike them, for example. That's just my opinion. I think that, you know, one alim had mentioned about this topic, and you know, it's, you have to judge it for yourself. But he says sometimes the most effective way to discipline a child is to take a step back from them. I don't know about all of you growing up, but you know, my mother is a typical mom, very, very, very loving, overly loving. Like would serve us on a tray with food, and would wake up for suhoor and sahur even though she wasn't fasting. And you know, even now, she's just an incredible angel. When I upset her, she can yell and scream even though she would never. But if she stopped talking to me for a couple of days, I would sit there and I would hold her feet. Ami, please, please talk to me. Right? She was very calm. I'm right now upset. Just leave me alone. That to me was more effective than any raising of the voice, any chappal, anything. Way more effective. Because you've now taken this source of love that a child has for you, and you've taken that away for a moment. To let them feel like what you did hurt me. That only happens when you're close to your child, right? You're close to your child, right? So even after days, after everything is done, everything is fine, she's normal, I'll still ask her randomly after a week, right? Ami, how's the name, huh? You're not upset, are you? No, beta, I'm in the bhul gaye, okay. Because I don't want that. But sometimes I think the most effective thing at that moment is to show your displeasure. But show it by taking a step back from them. If that means that you don't talk to them, if that means for a moment that you kind of give them a little bit of a break, if that means that with your actions you show that, I feel that's more effective than anything physical or yelling or screaming or those kind of things. Maybe that's a little bit too Western of me, I don't know. But I felt like that was always more effective. And that's what the ulama say as well. You lessen, reduce your love for them until they feel like what I did was wrong, and then you give that love right back to them. Yes, sir.
As you said that, take a step back.
Yes.
For these kids, like I've seen it, like Shreddin said, like when they do the step back, the kids start saying that, oh, my dad and mama are cruel, they don't want to talk to me.
Right.
So how do you cope?
So that's good. That's good. So he was saying that when you take a step back, like I said, then the kid actually reverses it back on the parent, says, you're cruel that you don't want to talk to me anymore, right? So, you know, one thing that I really want all of us to do is, if, again, if you have the luxury of having your spouse beside you, you're not a single parent in this room, then you have to use each other as a tag team partner. So if you're the one that's upset at the children, the mom now has to go and tell the child, look, Baba's not happy with you guys. That's why he's not talking to you. Or if the mom is upset, then you go and say, because Mama's not happy with you guys right now. If I were you, I would go and try to make everything right. They'll say that, Jadibai, because they know they're guilty. And fitri is that we try to deflect that guilt on somebody else. Right? Even Shaitan now is being kicked out of the garden of Allah. On his way out, he says, فَبِمَا أَغْوَيْتَنِي to Allah, you're the reason why I didn't do sajda. Meaning what? This is all your fault, God. Jur'at of Shaitan. It's your fault. I was good until Adam got here. Adam came and everything started wrong. I was fine before that. All of this whole debacle of me leaving the heavens is فَبِمَا أَغْوَيْتَنِي, it's your fault. So we do that a lot as well. So it's okay, let them say it. But eventually they'll understand that, you know what? I don't like the fact that dad's not talking to me. If that means they enter a room and you exit the room, then so be it. It's a harsh message, but it's important. Even God says, if you do this act, I will not answer your du'as. You can ask all you want, but it's going to be on deaf ears. Because you refuse to what? Respect my laws. Right? One morsel of haram food that we eat, Hadith says, consciously eat, knowing full of haram, 40 days, our worship will not be accepted. We can sit there and pray all night long. Allah says, right now, I don't want to hear from you. It's okay to say that to your kid. Right now, I don't want to hear from you. Leave me alone. I think that's more effective than yelling to the parent with a wall shake. That's when your wife comes and says, look, Baba's not happy with you right now. Right? Yes, right.
Nowadays, I mean, we've learned about different personality types.
Yes.
Communication
mechanisms. Yes. Yes.
And especially with parents, like, yes. You might have different personality.
Great point. Right.
To your child.
Right.
As parents, what can you do if
yeah.
you're not strong in their type of way?
Yeah. So different personality. Again, great, great question. We talk about the fact that every child has their own different personality trait. Right. I've given the example several times. I'm sure here as well. Is, you know, Imam Ali equates parenting to a gardener, right? The gardener's job is to identify each flower in the flower bed and then give each flower what it needs to grow. A horrible gardener is the one that applies the exact same water and sunlight and food to all the four or five flowers. He knows that a rose needs this to grow, a tulip needs this to grow, a carnation this to grow. He says parents are no different. A horrible parent is one who applies the exact same tarbiyah to every child inside the home. No. You are the gardener, your kids are the flowers. Every child has its own needs and requirements to grow, to prosper, to succeed. There are some kids that need to hug you 8 or 9 times a day. Right? There are some kids who will never hug you. Other kids that need validation constantly. Constantly, constantly. Like my Rahma, she makes cards for me. Cards. 3 times a day, cards. Fold it up into 8, opens it, says, Baba, I love you. Okay. Fold it, Baba, I love you. And she waits. But she needs to do that. That's fine. That's her. Right? So I know that, you know, she won't leave the car when I drop her off at school until she gives me a kiss on the cheek. And I have to say, Rahma, have a good day at school. Then she'll have a good day at school. To the point where if I forget, when I pick her up, it'll be in her mind so much she'll tell me, Baba, you know why I had a bad day today? Because you didn't tell me I had a good day at school today. I go, I'm sorry. You know? It's one child. My other one, doesn't care. She's gone. Doesn't matter what Baba says, what Baba doesn't. That's the flower. She's a rose, she's a tulip, she's a carnation, blah, blah, blah. It's important that you understand all 3 and 4 of your kids are 3 or 4 different, unique personalities. I'm sure you recognize that. Sometimes you look at 4 kids, you wonder, is these the same kids from one set of parents? Yes. Are you sure no one's adopted? No one's adopted. They're all the exact same biological kids. Right? So we have to recognize that, knowing each child. You know what we do sometimes as parents? We actually have we have appreciation days. So we take, let's say, our middle one, Rahma, and we go, my wife and I, and we have a day with her. We say, look, today is your day with Ammi and Baba. Anything you want to do. So the first thing she goes, let's go to Tim Hortons. Chocolate dip donut, chocolate dip donut. Then where do we go? Let's go to, I don't know, Legoland. Let's go. Just me, her, and my wife. The two are dropped off at their grandparents. And a month later, it's me, her, and my small guy Hassan. Me, my wife, and my eldest Mispah. And you talk to your kids. You end up finding out, you know, what makes them happy and their personality, right? And you start to give them what they need. These are things that need to be applied nowadays. You can't just sit there and give the exact same tarbiyah. Certain kids will not respond well to an outlashing. Certain kids will not respond well to this or that. You have to identify each child separately. Great question. Thank you, Zahid. Yes, sorry, I'll ask him.
So I have a question about we don't speak our native language.
Yes, anymore. Yes.
And the culture that we brought.
Correct.
And there are no grandparents.
Right.
To teach them the culture.
Right.
So what role would play just teaching them in English or talking? Like, main abhi bhi Urdu mein baat karna chahta hu for the sake of
right.
So many.
Right. So you know, it's a good point. So culture, obviously, the parents are from one culture, the kid right now is brought up in another culture. Language is an issue. Cultural influence are an issue. And I had this talk with somebody here last night that should we teach our children Urdu? And I'm a huge advocate of the fact that you should teach your child Urdu. But when it comes to the deen's ta'aleem and tarbiyah, don't just limit it to Urdu. I know parents who, you know, for example, and if it's wrong, I'm sorry, but I know parents who will take their child to an only Urdu majlis, and the kid does not know a single word of Urdu, because majlis should only be done in Urdu. And you're depriving this kid who's 10 years old, does not understand a word that the alim is saying. You don't know a word the alim is saying. Forget the child. Like, no, I refuse to take my child to an English one. For example, I'm saying, that's a little bit, you know, beat a little bit, right? You're being stubborn, right? But teach your child, if you can, absolutely. I'll tell you, Urdu is not, for the sake of my youth, Urdu is not just this cultural India-Pakistani language. Urdu, Arabic, and Farsi are Islamic languages. Meaning what? When you learn these languages, doors and treasures are opened of Islamic ta'limat. You have access to books, access to speeches by ulama who have really changed and revolutionized the world. When you're deprived of that and you're stuck to only English, then that really is a disservice to you. So do your best to teach them, if possible. If not, at least the cultural etiquettes. A lot of beauty from back home. A lot of these things that you won't find in the West. I ask you, don't use the West to teach your child family values. With all due respect, I'm sorry. They don't know a thing about family values here. Have you seen the way that the kid talks to the parents? At no frills, at Costco, in front of you. Imagine behind closed doors. And we're seeing that sometimes in our masajid. The way that these kids talk to their parents. Okay, Dad, I'm coming, Mom. Holy. In front of someone like me. 8, 9, does it happen? It does happen. It does happen. And they get that from TV, from media, from commercial, from their friend John, from their friend Becky at school. That's all they see. That's when you should, if not the language, at least the culture. How to talk to Buzurg, how to say salam. My mom still tells me up until now, bitte dake salam bolo. If I go to some random city and she finds out there's some random 8 cousins of hers is there, here's her number, at least call and say, I'm in town, salam, this and that. Who is she, Mom? Who is she? Daddy ki, padosi ki, okay, alright, okay. I'll call her. Right? Because she still does that, and I love her for it. So if not the language, it's very hard. Then at least some of these cultural small things. How to sit in a Farsi Azal, for example. How to meet people who are senior. How to shake someone's hand. I remember when I was young, 15, 16, I used to shake someone's hand, and I used to pat them on their shoulder. That's something I used to like doing. Elders. And then my dad pulled me aside. He goes, don't do that. That's rude. How are you? Good, good. Right? I said, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? Just shake the guy's hand and move on. Two hands if you can. And nice and firm. He would actually practice sessions with my father. He was a very strict man. Wouldn't allow t-shirts or jeans in the majlis. Nothing in my mouth. Gum candy. Check the bottom of my socks, for example. No hat for sure. Nothing. No walls. No, not at all. Right? I mention this all the time in my majlis. And that art is gone. We have to revive that. I love the fact that you asked that question. There's beauty in the Indo-Pak community. And I'm sorry, I don't see other communities. There's adab, there's etiquette, there's usul, there's principles and values that need to be taught to our kids. Right? Don't let them think that everything is Hindu, everything is back home, you guys are so, you know, behind the times. No, sometimes old is gold. Revive that beauty sometimes. Teach your kids that this is what, how it should be. Right? Inshallah. Last question. Yes. I'll get you. Sorry, I'll get you. Yes.
Islamic school is not in the region. Yeah.
Yeah, great question. Great question. So if you know, it's tough to put your kid inside of Islamic school. If that's not an option, should they go to homeschooling or should they go to public school? Look, to homeschool is a huge commitment, number one. You really have to have somebody that's committed inside your home. It's usually the mom who is committed, you know, to know the curriculum, to teach the curriculum, to be able to, you know, to teach your child. It's one thing where I teach your child, it's one thing where you teach your child. Right? Like my eldest has a Quran teacher. I can teach her Quran, no problem. I teach other kids Quran. But she won't listen to me. But with Sister Farida, she's... Right? So sometimes, you know, it's the challenge is to teach. You are the person's teacher and their mother. And then, you know, after school you see them, before school you see them, everything. So if you're able to have that commitment, my recommendation will be to homeschool. If the Islamic school is not an option, homeschool is number two. If not, then of course public school. I don't think we understand how horrible right now the school environment is out there. And I get it. I mean, Wali, Asadiq, Hadi, these are very expensive schools. Not for everybody. And sometimes it's a long drive. I know. Waiting list, it's not possible. If you can homeschool as a family, financially, syllabus-wise, the discipline that you need to homeschool your child, then I would recommend that to be option number two. That's just my opinion. I mean, everyone is different. Yes, go ahead, Ty. Sorry.
I had a lecture today, shortly about the parents.
Yes.
Can you please give any advice for the kids?
Yeah, I could give a whole extra about for the kids.
Quran, please?
Yeah, I can. Sure, I can. I mean, I'm running a little bit past my time. It is a week night, but. You know, I had mentioned a few times in my lecture today that this was from parent to child. From child to parent, of course, one hadith I'll tell you from Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq, alayhi salatu wasalam. You know, he was asked by one of his companions, why is it that sometimes in the Quran, you know, Allah says to believe in him, wa bi walidayni ihsana, and be good to your parents. Believe in him, what we wanted in Islam. Believe in him and be good to your parents. Immediately after believing in you, be good to your parents. There's nothing in between in terms of words. Many, many verses in the Quran. And he says, because without being good to your parents, you can't reach Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So if you want to invoke, if you want to gain the pleasure of God, guys, and everyone does, you have to start with gaining the pleasure of your parents. If you want to upset God, upset your parents. It's a very simple equation. Okay? Serving your parents is serving God. Angering your parents is angering God. It's a very simple equation. A lot of our youth today ask me, why am I not getting close to God? I set my alarms, I sleep through Fajr, I can't get myself to read the Quran. And the first question I ask them is, how good are you with your parents? I don't talk to my parents. We don't see eye to eye. I said, fix that first, then go to God. That's your jijab, that's your hesitation right there, that's your hurdle right there. Remove that, you'll fly towards Allah. Allah doesn't want to hear from you if you have a problem with your parents. At no point, Habib says, at no point should you ever disrespect your parents. You don't need to always listen to them in terms of ibadah. If tomorrow they say take off your hijab or stop praying salat, of course. You say, no, Dad. But never, Habib says, is there a moment where you should raise your voice to your parents. Hatta even if they were a mushrik, the Habib says. If they worshipped idols instead of God, still God says, never raise your voice to your parents. The who, the ha, the uff, the slamming of the doors, the stopping of the stairs, the okay, all that stuff. That, yeah, who does that? Not me, Lana, it's not me, somebody else. Please be very careful. Okay, please be very careful. Because you don't know how many du'as are out there when you leave the house that your mom and your dad give you. You don't understand that. Yes, go ahead, please.
Another thing that should be
nice to you.
If you have two children,
yeah.
The last thing you want to do is to compare them.
Right.
You have an issue with one, but you have a separate conversation.
Yeah.
Sometimes I see
yeah.
that
fall will
collectively
in front of each other, right. And then the things start between them,
right.
So they will go away and then start to,
right. Yeah. So he mentioned two things to add to our discussion. Number one is that you are not to compare two kids together. That happens a lot, and I think the idea is to for motivation, but it's taken as a negative connotation sometimes, and that goes back to the flower bed idea. You can't compare a rose and a tulip, right? Those are two different flowers. So don't do that. Number one. Number two is when you have a problem with one child, deal with that one child separately. Okay, and sometimes I think that as parents we want that to be a lesson or a learning moment for other siblings. So we'll talk to that one sibling. Hopefully the other ones listen, but at the same time you're embarrassing that one child, and then eventually you'll end up a conflict between the siblings. So you're also always the favorite, always the favorite, always the favorite. I was never the favorite. Happens a lot. Happens a lot. We ask you, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, inshaAllah, to accept our qaleel ibadat. We ask you, Allah, to accept our efforts these past 5 nights and to whatever is discussed for us to become better servants, better parents, better spouses for you, and to be, inshaAllah, ready for the arrival of the Imam, inshaAllah. One point I want to make as a note of gratitude and thankfulness to all of you for several things. Number one, for your attendance these past 5 nights. It really was incredible to see this many people come out after 2 months of grueling majalis. And number two, for you embracing this format. This was something that I had almost forced Iqbal Bhai and Shabbar Bhai and the team now to do with a lot of himmat, and they might get backlash for the fact that these are still the days of grief, and the member is a member. But all of you, I think at least to my face, embraced it, and your attendance was huge. So this also is the University of Imam Hussein. It's just a different style of teaching. That's all. Right? So I really, it shows a lot about your open-mindedness and your thirst and your hunger. Your questions were incredible. So I am thankful to all of you, especially, of course, the management here at Lady Fatima for including me in these past 5 nights.